You are now listening to Out of the Blank.
Welcome to another episode of Out of the Blank. It's Meeting of the Minds. All right, guys, we have some important things to discuss. Matt, James, welcome. Technically, you're the host of this, but it's my show, so we're at a standpass. Okay.
You're I like control. To be in control. Well, that's good. Otherwise, I'm sort of in control, aren't I? Because I'm hosting it, so I can...
You could end this at any second, basically.
I could end this anytime I wanted to, and turn it into my show,
You're the metaphorical Illuminati. I love it!
That's it.
Just gets to show us the real... All right, so I actually have a serious thing I want to talk about, because I've focused on, past government history, past kind of, ways or manipulational when it comes to, tactics that the government uses, depending if it's foreign or if it's just here at the home front, domestic stuff. But I think we talked about last time you both were on my show at the same time was we talked about the world of AI and technology expanding to this point. Now, I think the fear has gone from creating implemented tech into people, which I talked to my biomechanical engineer friend who is all about that, but it's kind of shifted to this direction now where we're seeing the Terminator stuff start to happen. Now, with AI technology, I think especially with all these social media platforms and these types of, for instance, Instagram and Facebook went down, it shows how much you're addicted to it. And I think these are a lot of tests in a way, just to see your reliance on this thing. Because with censorship, the biggest issue I've started to notice is that it censors the internet to make it a safe space, and the world is necessarily not safe. So now you're more appealed to the aspect of being online because it's safer than being in the real world. So there's no point in you experiencing the real world. Now, to stray off the line of conspiracies, we start to get into the algorithms and how this chemical addiction or this type of feeling that the internet is able to give you with connectivity, but also it's changing your thoughts. It's warping your perception on what reality is on the basis of what they choose to let you see. And I can only see that going farther and farther and farther. Data mining, for instance. Now, depending on when we talk about national or anything of that sort, when it comes to different countries, since you guys are in the UK, I'm in the States, everyone overestimates or underestimates. It's kind of like, for instance, if you're going to brag about This Week in Metropolis, shameless plug, to a person or someone at a bar, you're having a night out and you're like, yeah, I have this podcast. It gets a few listeners. And they're like, well, how many? And you would say a couple hundred, just because you're trying to get into this person's pants. But
300,000 is our standard answer to that.
Perfect. And then, and when you say that to them, there's this aspect of now you're overestimating your own proportions. For instance, our own countries will overestimate certain things on the basis of it's kind of like a brag, maybe necessarily not to other countries, but to us, to its own people, and will kind of undersell a lot of things when it comes to military stuff to other countries. So you're not expecting it. But I think with this fear of AI, and I think these ideas, these little glips you keep seeing all over the place, there's a real kind of it's kind of like there's two groups of people. One, the people think that the government's not as smart as they are. And then two is the people know the government's smart, but they think that if they do something, they'll stop researching into it. Well, the UFO thing, everyone's like, I didn't even know they were researching into it. Yeah. If it's a national threat like that, they're not just going to be maybe it'll go away. No, they're going to keep looking into it and they're going to keep funding it. It just doesn't get talked about. They find other ways to gloss over it. So I'm wondering what your guys' thoughts are on this kind of AI data mining, the fact that there are some companies that are talking about if you let them track your browsing history, you might get a better credit score. And I think that's pretty intense, considering that even though it would be nice to have a Lexus, I don't really want them to track my history, because I don't know what you would deem, if there's an algorithm running it, so what would be domestic terrorism? If I'm looking up government projects or trying to find lawsuits against Bill Gates or whoever, then can that be considered domestic terrorism? Because that's something I'm digging into that necessarily they don't want me to dig into, which then they could just label me as domestic terrorist. And I'm pretty sure I've never Googled how to build a bomb, but I probably should now, right?
It depends how good a credit score you want. That's what it is, isn't it?
875.
I'm 100% with you with all of that. I think the thing is, we don't need, there's always been, particularly in movies, this sort of threat, like a physical threat of robots and AI. And, you know, that's what we're sort of tuned into, is that Arnie's going to kick your door in and like come and get you. And also sort of like that you were saying about like biomechanics and that, and us actually changing into cyborgs sort of physically as well. But I think what's happened certainly over the last 10 years is it's happened to us anyway. Like with the internet, we are cyborgs in the sense of we rely on a portion of our memory for Google. We don't have to remember things. We can Google it. It's there and it exists. Same with your phone. Your phone contains all that information that you need. And that's really an extension of you now. It's not a separate thing. And that nationally and internationally, millions and billions of other people are exactly the same. If they want to know something, they don't necessarily have to learn it. It's there at their disposal. But also sort of with social media particularly, and I think last night was a very interesting experiment. I think you referred to it as like an experiment. Was I don't use social media a great deal for our podcast. James is the social media king. But not having three apps, there was something missing. Like you could feel there was something missing. And it was really odd. And I was sitting there thinking, this is strange. Like such a vacuum that will cause by those things not being there. And I think it's quite scary. And like you said, so the influence that Facebook in particular has over people, it's easy, it's friendly, it's there, it's nice, all their friends are there, and it tells you all this exciting information. But how much of it is true? How much of it is, you know, how much more of it are you not seeing is the key thing with it. And I don't know whether you've seen, there's a documentary called The Great Hack, which is primarily about Facebook, and it's about Cambridge Analytica, which is, was a UK business. Which they used Facebook to influence elections, like for example the Trump election. They supported that when he won, Brexit in the UK and all international things. And they started off as particularly for I'm probably not using the right term, but psychological warfare for military environments was how they started, and that's how they learned their trade. And they understood that you don't need to influence all the people that don't like what you want to put across. All you have to do is influence that small percentage that are on in the balance. And they understand that those people respond very much better. If you show them pictures of puppies, they're going to like it. But to get them to do something, you have to frighten them. You have to instill fear and hatred and those sort of emotions, and the emotions that lead that sort of thing. And their technology, that one of the people who testified in the trials with Cambridge Analytica in the UK, actually said that their technology is classed as a weapon because of the influence and the way it works. And for them to take that technology overseas or sort of cross borders, it actually needs sort of those permissions. Be it because of how extreme it is and what influence that can have in changing. Now, when you see that they, in sort of certain third world countries, and actually changed the outcome of elections based purely on what they did. And it's mad, absolutely mad, you know, and that's artificial intelligence in real life working against humanity as such, as here and now.
Well, if I was going to ask both of you, Matt, do you think that it would be more for government kind of control or more ways to manipulate, you know, the inner workings of the government to create a more structuralized system? Or do you think it's going to be more on the aspect of selfish intent. Business owners, for instance, technically marketing a product like Facebook, for instance. So the reason why they say the social media apps went down, apparently there was a Facebook whistleblower who apparently exposed a bunch of stuff of Mark Zuckerberg. Mark Zuckerberg just pulled the plug. Now, if you look at these apps, they're all owned by Facebook. Facebook is tied in with Instagram. So that it has a good theory to it. But then it gets to the point, like, it is kind of nefarious gain, because I think this has been going on for probably as the length of the internet. There's been slowly this buildup. And people are probably going to wonder, then why would they just show themselves now? And it was like, no, I think someone slipped a corner and then kind of messed everything up, that kind of now is making you more aware, much like the social dilemma. Edward Snowden exposing all these WikiLeaks and stuff like that that led to that documentary. You notice how people stopped caring about their data? A lot of people don't even know what that really means. And necessarily, if Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg, kind of like the way he kind of pushed out Facebook was the aspect that you are the consumer and then Facebook's kind of the product, but it's actually the other way around. They're able to sell your data. And this is why I don't use apps like TikTok, or I don't use apps like Clubhouse. I'm pretty sure TikTok server is now over here, but a lot of this data was being sent to China. That's why the Chinese government is so strict on no YouTube, none of these things, because we're data mining. We are to them, they are to us. Every country is data mining and trying to find information. But the weird thing is that there's a video interview with Yuri Bezmenov, I think his name is. He's an ex-KGB agent, and this was in 1984 is the recording. It's the video, I think, is 2013, but it's from 1984. And he's talking about a way to destroy a country is by – it's a 20-year process, and the method is to manipulate a certain generation and watch them, and you slowly start to kind of decentralize them and cause them to cause chaos, which is what we see with classes. And he mentioned the word social justice, which was before we even knew – like that was a big trend that started – people started realizing what that was like 5 years ago. So this is from 1984 he started talking about this. And we see that with these people that go, woke seems like it's doing the opposite. It's because it's brainwashed you to hate your country. And it is a certain generation. It's my generation. It's a little bit younger. You're indoctrinating kids on the aspect of like to make them hate their own country so their country can't stand together. I mean, the ideals of like for America, for instance, is freedom. Necessarily, they don't hate the American dream. They just hate all this racial inequality that gets talked about. But I don't think it's as common as they think. Like, they make it seem like every single person on the streets a KKK racist. And I think that's brainwashing from another country. And I don't know which country that was, but it's also the aspect of the government hasn't stopped any of these things happening. It's kind of like they're more focused on a military front. Like, are we going to be invaded? Are we going to be attacked with guns? Well, what's the easiest way to win a war without any casualties is just by making a country turn on itself by using manipulational tactics through technology. I mean, war is going to be fought eventually with technology. Robots and drones are starting to make temporary appearances now. And I think the reason why this is all kind of coming out is the government has newer tech. And they're like, we got to get the old shit out of the way. So they're just kind of like giving us like the glimpses of the old stuff. But it's a dude with a watch and he can type in onto his watch and a bunch of drones fly up like a bunch of bees. And he goes, this is the future of tech. He's ex-CIA, and he does a documentary now on the Sci-Fi Channel. But he's flying these drones around. It's like, that's going to be the future. But what have we already lost? Like, that's a like, if I was going to punch you in the face, that's an attack. But isn't an attack also writing stuff about you and slowly warping your perception to make you hate every single moment of your entire life? That's an attack as well, too. It's just not as at the forefront.
Yeah, completely agree. I also think, as well as the government influencing them sort of things, I think the media do as well. I mean, scaremongering. I mean, we've got it in the UK at the moment with lack of fuel, you know, and there was like queues as long as, you know, going back 30 cars deep to get petrol or diesel, because on the news channels they were saying there's a fuel shortage. And BP have closed several of their petrol stations. It was five in the UK, like five. And then people just go, what? I've only got three quarters of a tank left. I must go and get fuel. And then it's that perception that, well, if they're telling me, and this is another problem, and AI goes hand in hand with this, is like, we're too easily influenced by these things, even down to the smallest things like going somewhere. I'm useless. I'm more reliant on looking at my sat nav rather than knowing, well, actually, I can get from A to B this way, and I know that way, but my sat nav's telling me I need to go this way. Sometimes I feel like that, certainly from my generation, which was a kind of crossover one, and Matt and Robbie, yours is probably slightly, you're a bit younger than us. So
I'm 42.
What?
You look great.
How old are you?
I'm 42.
No,
I'm like a forever puppy.
No, you're not 42. No way. I'm not having it.
He has an amazing skincare regime. And that's what it is.
He does. But
beard's getting thicker. You noticed that from the first time you guys were on?
Yeah.
Well, once that filter's on there, it's going to look like James's, I'm telling you.
What filter?
This isn't real. This is a filter. Yeah,
that's it.
I'm in a matrix.
That's James's beard filter. Yeah.
But going back to my point, it's like we're slowly falling into that trap of become, you know, talking about yesterday with that outage, it was like an itch. Like I kept having to look at my phone to see if it had all come back online. I had a video I needed to post, and it was Matt's video, and I didn't want to let him down. So there was that kind of, I must look quickly and then step away. 10 minutes later, I'm checking again. And, you know, thankfully, Twitter stayed up.
Well, here's the thing is that a couple of years ago, I don't know if a lot of people remember, I think it was around 2015, but Twitter went down for a brief amount of time. And it was the same thing with the Instagram and Facebook. Now, I don't know if the whistleblower thing is true. My theory or my idea is the fact that maybe Twitter has a lot of like the same kind of people that use it regularly. But Instagram and Facebook are still kind of dominating the market with Twitter kind of coming up. And it might have been an aspect of like, I think all these tech companies are kind of working in the same boat on some things. So maybe if you wanted to get more views or more people on your platform, everybody was on Twitter. Like everyone was talking about, thank God Twitter's still up. And it's true, because that was kind of like, hey, my Twitter thing, for instance, I'm not getting enough people on it for a long amount of time. I need more people on it. Facebook is more of like, I got to sit down and you can spend an hour just going through. Twitter's like a couple of minutes and you're off doing your own thing. Instagram is a little bit longer because you got to scroll through pictures and catch up on your newsfeed. So they need more time. So what happens if Facebook, Instagram, they just shut down just so people could spend more time on Twitter, constantly refreshing and checking status updates. I think it was trending in a matter of a couple of minutes. I did a podcast 10 minutes into the whole, when I knew Instagram was down, because I was trying to get my friend Melissa, I was trying to message her on Instagram and it wasn't loading. So I just sent her a text and then we started talking about it. I was like, imagine if they just decided to test everybody and then we get off of it. And she's like, this is eerie. Like you called it in the podcast. I was like, I mean, it only makes sense. It's not the exact part about fear. Like for media, for instance, they just found that the right recipe was clickbait. And if that means scaring the shit out of you and making you panic buy or do whatever, then they don't understand that the power that they have. But I think they know the power that they have. I think the thing is that America has always been on the media or major headlines. Now we're seeing the UK. And I'm like, I think we had more chips that were involved into us, like a bunch more people trying to target us through our media for longer. And then everyone else was like a little bit off to the side, like, here, I'm going to secondary this. I'm going to backburn this. And now we're seeing all of it happen, which I think this is important, because if my country's in chaos and your country's in chaos and Australia's in chaos and everybody else is in chaos, this is important to highlight that you're not the only one with the problem. Everyone has this problem. And there's a bigger issue, which is now the social reliance that we have given into our devices. I only post and I ghost. And I'll message some people, but I really don't like being on the device because there's that nagging feeling when it goes away of why can't I access it? And you're just constantly refreshing something, thinking maybe you're the problem. Then you feel less important. There's a mental health thing that really links in with this device. And I think that's a concept of you want to feel safe. And sadly, social media gives you something to do without really spending any money, unless you're like me, spending $3.99 on gem packs every 10 minutes. But it makes you feel safe in a way that the world really doesn't. And I think this is important to highlight the fact that when you go out at night and you look up at the sky, you don't see a lot of stars as I did, at least when I was a little kid. That concept is the fact that you favored having lights inside of your home, that you burned out the biggest light above us with light pollution. And I think that's important to notice, that these things that have been working in the backdrop, such as an ocean beach, like Matt, like you have your background as, things of that sort are so important to what stabilizes you as a human. Mm-hmm. So I'm not necessarily afraid of this military onslaught of AI machines, Terminator style. I'm more worried about the addictive properties, like things I went to school for chemical dependency for. I can see subtle glips and notes of like when someone's tweeting 10 times in a day and it's only a matter of an hour. And you're like, that's not healthy. And it seems a little bit off. Like, why are they tweeting at a giant politician? Like they're going to respond to them. Like, you don't know what you're doing. You're burning down the, I'm like, what? They don't care about you. They don't even know your name. They don't
they
even
don't
get
even
that
see
notification.
That tweet. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, definitely. I think for me, a lot of, one thing I've been doing recently, I do share it with James and he thinks I'm a bit of a psycho, is I think it's important to learn. Like so many people use technology and technology gets made easier and easier and easier and easier to use. And, you know, it's just a case of, clicking on something and everything's working. I think it's so important for all new generations to understand how these things work and understand that it's all just software. That's all it is. It is just software. It's, you know, the creating a Word document on your computer is no different from, you know, putting a post on Instagram or whatever. It's all code and it's nothing more than that. There's a lot of emotional attachment to it, but it's important to understand that, like you said, the surveillance that exists within the apps that you use, and it's important to understand that there are settings to minimize that. It's important to understand that you don't have to use Google Chrome. There are alternatives, and there are very good alternatives which are a lot safer for you. And, you know, it's important to understand that there's not just Microsoft Windows. You can use Linux, and some of those things are amazing. And just by, I'll tell you, it's worth, if, you know, you know how to do it and so on, is to set up a computer with Linux and go onto the internet with Tor and use DuckDuckGo instead of Google. And do a search, and it is like a completely different internet exists out there. There's a completely different world out there. The internet just isn't all about Google and Facebook and so on. There's so much more to it, and there's so much information out there and so on that you can get. And it's I don't know. I guess it's more akin to when people in the early 90s and mid 90s were first using the internet and stuff. It wasn't commercial. It wasn't all about brands and that. There's, you know, there's a way of communicating to each other, and it's a way of sharing information and so on. And I think that's a little bit lost now. And that is, it's not difficult to set up a flash drive with a different operating system. It's really easy, and you just have to look.
It's very easy to fall into a habit, and it's very hard to get out of one. And sadly, we've given the keys to business in the eyes of tech or eyes of social media. Now, for instance, if you're a content creator, you best be online to be able to do your social media posting, or you best be online to be able to let people know that you're still creating content, or they'll unfollow you and then you lose a following. For instance, I notice, like, I don't post on social media a whole lot. So I do a story and then I do usually one post, and that's it all day, basically. And when I posted my episode, when this whole social media thing happened, I was still getting the views that I normally get. And I'm like, well, glad that everyone knows I don't care about the whole social media aspect thing of it. And I think that's important, because it's a giant weight off my back, because that fear of, like, am I going to lose everything that I built for if I'm not just constantly posting or being on the social media device? I'm not willing to sacrifice my own happiness for the aspect of just being on the eyes of social media, or do whatever that is. Businesses, during the pandemic, social media was a benefit, but now it's very hard to get off the tit of that, because it's so easy to do that or put up an ad or a sponsored thing, then just go out and promote your stuff in person when you don't really feel like getting out of your house anyway. I mean, I've talked to plenty of business owners that go, I'm trying to get a storefront. And my first thought in my head, even though I necessarily don't believe this, is the fact of, like, why would you get a storefront if you could just do an online shop and promote it through? Because it's easier. There's a hope that you're going to reach more people. But how many of those people are bots? There's back on the old school thing of catfishing was people on World of Warcraft that were like, want to fuck? And you're like, yes. And then now it's this aspect of, like, catfishing is bots that are constantly, like, my biggest thing was the lab thing. The virologist from Australia that said, I've worked at that lab and there's never been a bat there. Then they show a fucking video of someone holding a bat and she deletes her Twitter. That's a bot. That's somebody else saying something or getting paid. And then they were in the pocket of somebody. Pandora Papers, the big biggest thing right now. All these people, all these politicians, mostly some in the UK, that they were being funded and they made decisions on things they shouldn't have because they had a bias in that decision. Mm. This is what social media or the media is good for, to be able to expose this type of stuff. But if they're able to, like, when you get your laptop for the first time and you're typing in, like, downloading your browsers, when you turn on your computer for the first time, it goes, welcome to Windows or Mac or whatever the hell you're using. Then it shows you, would you like a tutorial? Skip the tutorial. Well, every time my computer updates now, and it's about 5 years old, it always updates and says, let me show you what's new. No. They're like a parent that never lets you ride your bike by yourself. They're constantly holding onto your shirt. And that's what Google does. They walk you through everything. They let you see things that they want you to see, not things that necessarily they'll be like, oh, can't find it. Well, why can't I find this? Well, oh, it's not on here. Well, why does DuckDuckGo have it? Then they create this conspiracy that it's not Google that's hiding things. It's DuckDuckGo that's making things up. And then it's like, well, then what the hell's true? Because I've heard way more on the other side, and you're not showing me those things. And, like, it just gets very, very tricky where I'm starting to be like, I don't want anybody treating me like a child or just grabbing me by the hoodie and walking me through a store. Or like, nope, you got to go this way and turn me. Don't turn me. Let me. I'm a peacock. You got to let me fly.
I think you're right. I think there is too much. In everything, like, you know, even going down to things that me and Matt like computer game consoles and things like that, there's always that kind of, it's always trying to lead you in a certain way. And that's the same with, you know, computers, laptops, PCs, whatever. And you aren't just left to try and find your own way around things anymore, which, yeah, you're right.
Purposely, no, I think I'm making my life's mission to screw with any algorithm that is sort of in existence. You know, my Spotify one, my music taste is so over the, all everywhere. It still recommends good stuff to me, I must say that. But, you know, and like browsing history and stuff like that, you've got to keep it guessing. Turn everything off that it's wants on there and just go wild.
So my biggest example for, like, I think AI is, it's fascinating to me, mostly to see how it updates, because old dinosaurs like me and you guys are just eventually going to be phased out of this new world system that AI algorithms are going to be, because we're not kids anymore. We're not able to soak up the information and find tricky ways around the system. It's much like when you watch your kids play Minecraft and they're like, how the hell did you build something like that? Like, I got a little ship over here, and they set it on fire. And like, okay,
perfect. I recommended Minecraft to James, and he had that very much that same thing.
I feel
not
like
for
a
not for me to play, not for me to play for my 5 year old.
Love Minecraft, man. Minecraft's amazing.
The algorithm, for instance, has gotten to this point where you're looking at someone put up a Facebook post or something, and certain middle words that shouldn't be capitalized or capitalized, and you're learning that that's a way to get around the algorithm now. And now the algorithm's going to update to be able to fix that situation. And sadly, it's a lot like Frankenstein. Frankenstein was created by one person. That person's ideas or thoughts created Frankenstein. Now, if somebody else that wasn't that person decided to create Frankenstein, it would be a completely different Frankenstein. These algorithms are based in surveys or data mining from different situations to get more attention, but it's created by one person or a team of people. That's why there's so many different algorithms out there. In every different network, there's things you can say, there's things you can't say. These things constantly keep evolving and adjusting in the bias that why they're created in. Facebook's bias would be anything that Mark Zuckerberg believes. So he's a Biden fan. You couldn't find the Hunter Biden laptop thing during this political thing because anything was better than Trump. So Brett Weinstein, when he first started doing his podcast and everything, he created a Twitter page called the Unity Party. Now, the Unity Party was people that necessarily don't agree with the left and necessarily don't agree with the right. It was just supposed to be a middle ground, like Tulsi Gabbard, Dan Crenshaw, the fucking villain with the eye patch. But they're good people, but like they're more or less government control and more control for people and more like let people decide, like military, leave that to the military to decide. It's not going to be just made by one person. And this algorithm at this point and all these things decided, no, we just can't have Trump. So anything that could be separated into a third party, that's votes taken away from Biden. And that's where this election fraud thing starts to get into, because these algorithms necessarily might not have been programmed initially to do that, but they started to learn because you've censored out so many words by banning one of those candidates off all these social media platforms. So this is where they talk about election fraud. I don't think it's necessarily tampering machines, but I think it's an aspect of you kind of subliminally programmed this backdrop thing that's working like a background processor to process out anything that happens to do with one candidate. Now, I don't believe the election was fraud. If anything, I think Russell Brand has talked about that the Clinton thing might have been Russiagate or something like that. It's where he's getting a lot of crap for, because it turns out it wasn't Trump election fraud. It was actually the Clintons versus whatever. I don't know. I'm not getting political now. We're going to stick to AI. No. But with the AI algorithm, for instance, now, if this thing can be created and modeled after what the person's beliefs are, then there's going to be so many different algorithms out there where eventually it's going to be people like us that are going to just be too old to be able to figure out how to adapt to the new changing thing. We're just gonna be like, I don't want to even be on the device. And we're just going to put it down, which hopefully a lot of people can get behind that. And maybe we can see a better world start to happen where people are actually like, you remember me? And they're like, Dad? You're like, yes, son, it's been 40 fucking years, and you give them a hug. But there's the younger generation that are involved with this that are able to adapt so quickly that they're going to keep upgrading the algorithm and upgrading the algorithm. Then we got to rely on the fact that human evolution has to keep beating this algorithm that keeps upgrading, where older generations through the human evolutional process are just going to end up being phased out because they're too old to want to really change to this new social media thing. We'd rather just not deal with it. But these younger generations, the kids that seem like this is the way to content create, this is the way to get famous, this is the way to get popular, they're going to keep trying to go and go and go. And next thing you know, we're going to have this AI thing that's smart as hell that we can't even make a move without this thing being like, nope, sorry, you said this. And you said the letter of this word, which we know is going to predict the intent that's going to lead to this actual word, which you can't say this actual word, even though it might not. We don't know, but we're predicting your intent before it happens.
There was recently, in the last few weeks, and I don't know the exact details about it, in the UK, there are certain court cases that are going to start to be decided, but the verdict is going to start to be decided by AI.
Great. Burn them all. Literally. Burn them all.
So, you know, it is like Minority Report, isn't it? But yeah, it would be simple to, I think they justified it as like very simple. I don't know. Robbie stole my bike. How do we know this? Because Robbie's riding my bike. Yeah, we'll, you know, that's life. whatever it may be. So yeah, those
just picture me hanging from an orchard at that point, just hanging by the neck.
So what? So you won't have a jury then?
No, not at all. It will just be settled online and with some piece of software to do it. Yeah,
it's so annoying because I've always wanted to do jury service, but
have you
never been called in for jury duty?
I haven't. No,
I'm in the same boat. I haven't been, but I'm only 23, yeah. So
exactly. I'm a survivor. I've not done it yet. I'm going to get a letter through the door now, aren't I? That I've got to go.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's apparently coming into the UK. I don't know when that's coming, but that's a real thing with that. But what I was going to say, Robbie, to put a question to you, do you think the solution to all of this is decentralization of the internet, if you've ever looked into that, in terms of, you know, blockchain is the most common thing that people associate with it and so on?
Well, the KGB guy I was mentioning, that's another stage of tearing down your own country and brainwashing is decentralization, which is just forgetting this whole idea of what it is. Now, necessarily, do I agree with that? No. I'm probably a patriot at heart, but I think that it's not necessarily the idea. It's the more of the people that are involved with it, because I know people. I've talked to a lot of people. People aren't really going to want to do something unless it's in benefit for themselves. You know, I mean, if you're going to be on my show for the first time, usually it's about promoting something or it's about doing this, but it never really sticks to that basis. But then you develop a connection and you realize there's actually having fun and there's a whole other experience that goes along with it. But with AI, for instance, I don't think that disconnecting from it is ever going to happen. Maybe we can get generations that just never use it. I know my nephews, for instance, they're not allowed to watch TV. They're not allowed to do a bunch of stuff. When I come over, we're watching Jaws, even though they're three. That's fine. They don't sleep usually afterwards, but that's not my problem. but with algorithms, I think it's just about understanding and being aware of the issue that's at hand, and also kind of the censorship, all of that. You can't have it. I don't want anybody to say something and make someone hurt themselves, but I'd be a hypocrite if I said, you got to stop those, because it doesn't stop you from moving the goalpost. You know, just like during the pandemic, be in your house in 2 weeks, that's it. And then after 2 weeks, you're good. It went a lot longer than 2 weeks. Like, they don't just stop at one thing. They keep moving it and moving it and moving it just to keep testing power until eventually you push back. When people started to push back is when we were starting to open back up again. And I say, this is kind of the thing with AI. You got to push back on it to let them know, hey, man, like, we've already, I think everyone's accepted the data control thing. I think everybody's accepted. We don't care if we get to use the app, then sell our data. I don't even know what that means. But then it's going to get to your browsing history. Then it's going to be the eyes of, like, hey, you know, you get to get a new car or get a better tax bracket or whatever. You get less, you don't have to pay taxes this year because you get all this information that they're stealing from you and giving to advertisers, where eventually you're going to be forced advertising without even wanting to see it, which to me, that's the biggest kind of curse, because then you're messing with human thoughts. And I think this is why we have a lot of people that have this warped reality. Is not a factor of brainwashing, but your reality has been tampered with through eyes of media, through eyes of whatever your, I guess, influence or whatever your first impressions of things are. I mean, people see the headlines because they're too lazy to read the articles, mostly because the world is so fast paced and time consuming that even if you're not doing something or doing whatever in that minute, then you've lost it. And that's kind of with content creation. The eyes of being in the public is the eyes of, you need to be now, rather than just doing you and working at your own pace. You buy a machine to make your life easier. Then what do? You just sit on your fucking phone because you don't have to worry about vacuuming the house because you have a Roomba that's doing it for you. Like, it doesn't make sense. There's gaps and there's not LinkedIn kind of ties on the aspect of, like, why are you going to buy that to make your life easier if you're just going to spend more time being mindless and being, you know, kind of consuming products? Here's where the algorithm gets crazy. Now, imagine if every time you go out for a smoke break, you're sitting there smoking your cigarette outside, you know, looking around, and you would just talk, you know, yeah, I get these cigarettes, you know, someone goes, can I bum a cigarette? Can I bum a cigarette? Can I bum a cigarette? After a month of every day someone bumming a fucking cigarette, you either say, hey, get your own fucking cigarettes, or you go, I'm done smoking cigarettes. So, because it's getting expensive. So you say, I'm going to quit doing cigarettes. Next thing you know, every time you check your phone, it's all fucking cigarettes or nicotine ads. And you're like, oh God, I'm just trying to beat the addiction. And you can't get off your phone. And now you suck right back into the addiction.
That exists now, though, doesn't it? Completely. Yeah.
100%. Crazy. I never used to be too aware of it with advertising. I'd kind of had things pop up, even like Instagram or whatever, and it'd pop up on your feed and you'd be like, that's weird. I was thinking about something about that the other day, or I might have mentioned it to someone. And then slowly but surely, I mean, I've got, we talked about on our show recently, but I've got an Alexa that's sat here on silent at the moment, so it's not listening to me. And most of the time, but most of the time it's on not listening mode, because I'm more conscious of it now, I think, because, you know, even your phones are listening, let's be honest. I mean, Google, Siri on Apple and things like that, they're always listening. So there's always something that's popping up that you've talked about. And nowadays, I just kind of ignore it more. But also, in addition to that, kind of usage of these sorts of electrical equipment and things like that, I'm more conscious of looking at the data in my phone now about how long I've spent on it. And I'm more like, Jesus Christ, I've spent a lot of time on it. You know, especially as I deal with all of the social stuff on our podcast, I do have to spend a lot more time on it. But at the same time, once it gets to a certain time at night, and even on Sundays a lot of the time now, I won't bother. I think the thing that I most enjoy using it now, and you're part of this, is communication. you know, with people that we've met through our show. And that's something that I never used, you know, Facebook from, I mean, I think when I first got into social media, it would have been like MySpace and Bebo and things like that, which, and the modern day versions are Facebook, Instagram and all that. So, but you used to just, you could spend like hours scrolling through and I've already seen that. Yeah, scroll past the next one. I think the one that probably does that most now is TikTok. You can literally just get lost on that now. I could lose a lot of time on there if I wasn't careful, because it's, you know, that's what it's there for. It's there to make you go.
That's how they make it so that you do it.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, that they're doing the right things as such. And it's always, there's always the next trend on, certainly on TikTok. I mean, we've got our own TikTok, but we're not like trying to be on it and keep up with the trends. It's more from promoting the show. We can put clips from our show out and the occasional funny one that we think is quite good. But it's never, you know, you're never going to see me and Matt doing a dance to something, because that's not what we're about. But people, you know, listen, people have become famous from stuff like this. So there's a market there.
Can you remember before there was that app, though? Like, do you remember that time? Because I think with disconnecting from my phone a little bit, it started to come back to when I was like in high school and I would just get stoned all day and forget to use my phone, or at least forget where I left it. Most of the time it was in the fridge. but there was a different feeling that I'm starting to feel again, which is an aspect of like, I don't feel tied to anything, that I feel like my brain just neglects to go there or check the apps over and over and over again. Cause I didn't have a show back then. So the show kind of pulled me in a way. And now I'm starting to realize that necessarily I don't really need the show to keep me tied to social media. I can still do it, but I don't have to use my social media anymore, because it still gets created. It goes out there. It's logged somewhere. Now, when does that get attention? I don't know. It could be a year down the line, but it for me, it's not necessary. Like, cause I know friends that'll be like, you don't like my posts anymore. And it's like, well, if you think that I follow you because I have to like your posts, or you follow me and I expect you to like every my post, then do we even have a friendship?
Exactly. You know, like, I still like you. It's not, you know.
It's just, it's very strange to see how like it's kind of worked its way in there. And I think we've all been paying attention to the new technology and new obvious kind of realization or results that we see when it comes to a new iPhone that can control your toilet or something like that. But we didn't notice the backdrop, which was the fact that now are like kind of chemically induced by this thing in such a way where you'll be sitting there talking with someone, they'll have their phone out and be like, what'd you say? And it's like, what, like I was talking to, we just had a full on conversation. Oh, dude, I wasn't even paying attention, man. I was actually shopping on Amazon. And it's like, you start to see like people complain about the issue when it comes to Bezos or all these other people. I'm like, they're business people. Sadly, you thought you were getting sold a product and you don't realize you are the product. You are now conditioned and now controlled like a little internet slave to this thing. And I'm not trying to be a boomer where I'm like, oh, the internet's hell. The internet's amazing. But the way that it's kind of changed and formed is because they left in, and I've heard, I forgot what his name is. He was the guy who created like one of the original podcasters, not like Howard Stern or Opie and Anthony when they had their radio shows, but a guy who first took podcasting to a stream like Apple. He sold it to Apple, and Apple, it was able to fine tune it and correct it and make it on certain platforms that they were connected with. So your show was only accessible on these networks and they could use your data, whatever way they want. They could choose. They're basically overlord gods. And sadly, with these companies, I don't think anybody, much like our founding fathers over in the States or anybody back in the day, a couple hundred years ago, could never predict that the internet would be this tool that was used today. Because when the internet first came out, from what I've heard, is that people are like, only nerds used it. Now it's like nerds are the mainstream. Hell, nerds rule the world. It's Revenge of the Nerds, but this is part 4 or part 5, whatever the hell it is. And it's those jocks, to those people that were in high school that played on the football team, that necessarily they still use a device, but they're like, well, now I'm the loser. And it's like, yeah, because now the world has done a whole 180, where the people that used to get picked on are now running things and owning businesses and making it almost damn near impossible for any startup to be able to do anything. that's why it's so strange when you see these whistleblowers or you see people that try and leak stuff or be able to hack things or break a certain code. And it's because it's like, damn, you have a lot of power compared to these AIs or these giant elite figures who see that and they go, we got to squash this problem. Because they're something where they feel like they've been in power for so long, they can't believe that someone found a way past their system. And it might be the next generation of people that are going to control or take down a lot of these figureheads. I think the internet needs to shift in such a way where it's a free open platform. It should be a horrible shit show. It should be a point where you get on there, you're like, God damn it, someone called me an idiot. And I'm just, you should be all self-conscious as hell, because then you're going to spend less time on it because all you're doing is getting pain. And then if you're that side, maybe small percentage of the population that has a kink where they like being abused and all that, then fuck it, you're on there more. But it's supposed to be like that because now you've been conditioned that the world is the devil and social media is a safe haven. That's not true, and that never will be around. True. Yeah,
it's by far the other way around. But I think that, you know, Nick, you saying about whistleblowers and so on, I think that's the wonderful thing about the internet is that, and it's certainly something I very much feel passionate about, that the information is free. Like, things off on the internet, you can find anything you want. You know, as hopefully your intentions are good and you have the, you know, sort of looking for things that society would agree are good things as such. But you can find out information. You can find the information about businesses. You can find the movies you want. You could find, you know, stories about whoever and whatever they did in the past and so on. And some people may disagree with some things. Some people might agree with some things, but it's there and everyone has a platform. Social media has made it where it's all about likes and so on, so people view that more than the content itself, in some regard, which is why it's cheapened. But, you know, us and our podcast is a prime example of it. We put this out because we love doing it every single week or whenever it may be. However many people will listen to it, fair enough, but it gives us a voice. You know, and there are, even if there are just a handful of people that care about that voice, it's great, you know, that we can do that. And we can reach people and we can make bonds internationally and so on, which is fantastic.
It's a community, isn't it? That's what we've, yeah. I think since we fell into that trap, and I'm sure we've spoke about it to you before, we fell into that trap of thinking what's going to get us more listens, more likes, more views, whatever. And as much as we enjoyed talking to people of some form of celebrity or status, the better ones that we've had have been the ones like talking to you, like talking to other people who do podcasts, other creators of comic books, or you know, things like that, people in music.
Just like-minded people.
Yeah, like-minded people. And since then, it's been like, you know, I've built up friendships and we've built up friendships with these people. You know, we speak relatively often. There's
value to it, you know, more value than likes.
Yeah, and I think that's been one of the most important things to us now. And I think that's changed our way of looking at it. It's not about what, you know, if one person listens to our show or watches it, great. But even if they don't, the main thing is we enjoy doing it, and it gives us a bit of creativity to, you know, write our own narrative as such in that respect. And something that we'll look back on, talking about tech, like in 20 years' time when our kids have grown up and we might have grandchildren and things like that. I mean, who knows what the tech will be like then, but excuse me. But that our children will be able to go and look back on everything that we've done. They'll be able to look back at Out of the Blank podcast and see when we were the first time we came on individually or as This Week in Metropolis. You know, all of that will be there. So, that I mean, yes, there are a lot of negatives as well with AI and tech in general, but there's still quite a lot of positives, so long as the drive is the right cause, I think.
Do you think, Robbie, that that one thing that I'm very interested in is something called the metaverse? which I don't know whether you've read about. The metaverse, if you don't know, is basically
Spider-Man.
Well, it's basically a combination of digital and real world. So there's a seamless link between the two. So if you've ever seen Ready Player One, for example, that's a good example of a metaverse. But in their example, in that particular book, the world is completely ruined. And the only sanctuary you have is by putting these glasses on, and you're in a completely different world. And that's your world as such, that you can engage with. And a lot of companies, Facebook primarily, has shown very much indicated that they want to create this thing. And even Epic Games with sort of Fortnite have started doing it, and they've sort of shown interest. I mean, you play Fortnite, you can watch a concert in Fortnite with Ariana Grande, and you can, it has its own currency. You can socialize on there. You can play any games on there. It's becoming more than just a game as such. What are your thoughts on that sort of thing? Do you think that will happen? That we'll just have headsets on and ignore the planet?
I think it's more likely the fact that when you start making the online reality better than the actual one, you're now not incentivizing people to want to go live in their own reality. This is why we have people like, I think we talked about this a long time ago. Is this examples from a long time ago, but there was a guy who played World of Warcraft, and he was like a hero in the game. Now, when you play a game like this, like if you ever play video games, you get online, people are like, oh shit, he's online. Yeah. And you seem like a god in like a lobby filled with like noobs or whatever you want to call them. That's already a small bit of divisiveness is trying to prove or trying to make yourself on a better level than a lot of these other people, saying that they pale in comparison to you. But when you get on World of Warcraft and you're a hero, you know, you get online, you're level 100, whatever the level it goes up to, whatever, you start to kind of see how people react to you. Like, yes, they're all messaging you and you're loved, but then you go to your day job and you're a box boy at a grocery store and you feel like a loser and you're like whatever age and you're out of shape and you're just upset with your life. But in this game, you're a hero. It never incentivizes you to want to leave that video game or want to go experience your own reality. Not necessarily it's a bad thing that you're playing video games, but the hold that it has on you. When I was just doing this podcast weekly before I started getting onto the Zoom thing and enjoying it that way, like in the first 100, I was posting one a week. And I remember I was bored. I had like 15 episodes pre-recorded. So that's already like more than a couple of months saved up. And I was like, damn, if I can't podcast, I'll try World of Warcraft again. In 3 days, I got to level 94. All I did was work out and then I went pee. And I ate, and then I played World of Warcraft all day. That was it for 3 days straight. And I'm like, okay, this is an addictive thing. I'm not getting into this. I'm going to use it in a more beneficial way. I could have, by now, after the 3 years of doing this podcast, an army of World of Warcraft characters that are all the way up to max level. Or I could have a bunch of online video game presence. I could be Master Prestige or whatever. That's not something I want to invest my life into, but there's a lot of people that will, which leads into this point where what's going to get to the point where video games get so real where you can just enter a simulation and never want to leave? You know, that reality is now going to be targeted and is going to probably be marketed in such a way because of the aspect of, I don't think people understand what they're buying into. I think when they market something to you, it's kind of like, oh, this is amazing new video game. Sims, for instance. When I was a kid, I bought the game Sims. I fucking love that game because I could have a vending machine in my house. And it was like a pool in the basement, even though that's, you can't do that. There's mold issues. You'll die. But I did it because I could do whatever I wanted in this game. I was like, yes, I'm going to make a whole entire family. I'm going to have billions of dollars. I'm going to be a cop. Then I'm going to switch my job career and be an astronaut. Then I'm going to have a bunch of random trees outside of my house. And whenever someone tries to come up to my house, we'll be hidden by trees. And then I'll find a way to kill them. But murderous intent aside, there's this thing where now I'm actually adult and I'm living my life and I'm, you know, understanding what bills are and how houses work and realize like that was always so enticing to play because I didn't have to worry about investments. You don't have to worry about pulling a loan out of your bank account. You don't have to worry about your credit score. You don't have to worry about what location you're going to live in, what upgrades you're going to have to do to the house, paying electric, paying water, paying this, because the game dumbed that all down for you. and you could just randomly create a random love of your life, fuck them, and then that's it. It's over. And that's not how it works in reality, which it seems a little bit bland when I can do that in 5 minutes on that game. And in reality, it's going to take what I got to. And that's if the future love of my life is a major slut. And I don't think that's going to be true, but it's that kind of like, it's the same thing with like Farming Simulator. My buddy's a farmer. I'm like, you do that all fucking day. He goes, yeah, but this is just easier. I don't have to get all the equipment set up and do all this. Well, then what's going to stop farmers from doing their thing? There's a lot of older generations that don't agree with playing video games or doing these types of things. But every young kid, that's their main attracted thing, is because that's all they know. That's their nostalgia. It's why people love Disney World so much. They've captured the drug of nostalgia. When you go there, you're a child again. You have all these memories, you have these amusement rides. You could be waiting in a line for a roller coaster for like 4 hours. You can step in gum, you can step on like a soft pretzel, and you're just like, this is terrible. It's been 3 hours, we might as well leave. And as soon as you go and turn around, the cart shows up and you're like, awesome, the roller coaster ride's here. The bars go up and you look and all the seats are torn and ragged to shit. There's like shit stains on the seats and the bars are all rusted shut, and you're like, fuck it. And then you get in anyway and you throw your hands up and you wait for the damn loop-de-loop. That's doesn't it's the accessibility. You wait all this time and then it shows up and then you're going to take it anyway, even though it's put you through hell. It's the same thing that happened with this pandemic. Unemployment, for instance, everyone got it like after everything opened back up, after months and months of just pain of calling a number that never fucking answered, but they all forgot about it because they just gave you money. And then people are like, oh, all my anger went away. No, understand that if this happens again, it's going to happen the same way. Do you want to go through all those hours and hours and days and weeks and months of stress, taking minutes off your life, basically? All for that 1 second that just redoes it all. It's kind of like when I read the Bible and the Bible's like, and then God sent down a firestorm, which burned his house down, killed his family. And then he was stoned with sheep and covered in ants. And then it's like, what the hell's the point of believing in this thing? And then they go, and he never lost faith. And God took it all away and gave him a new house, new this. I'm like, doesn't fucking matter. You still killed the old family and you gave him a new one. Unless he hated his kids and his wife, that's okay. But I have questions. And that's what I start to look at with this tech thing, where I said, it's never bad to ask the big question of why, where it's going, how it's going to get there, and what are these things and how do we modulate it or regulate it to make sure that it's not going to contaminate the brains of so many other kids out there or so many other future generations that are eventually going to take hold of this earth. The biggest fear to me is when I heard this guy, Mike Baker, who's ex-CIA, say, space colonization is impossible. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, we're taking civilian ships up there, right? He goes, it's already weaponized. And I'm sitting there like, what? And he goes, China, America, UK, everybody that has a satellite up in the air, they're all trying to steal data from each other's satellites. They're all trying to find ways to do this. There's actually tech, those drones I mentioned, they're trying to find ways to use them for defense as well too, where it can send out little electro impulses to stop surveillance from other satellites from spying in on your countries. You know, the old method of how they used to do that was building your factories in a very weather inclemented part of like the state or whatever, like Pittsburgh, for instance. It's all kind of dreary, rainy, very cloudy type place. All of our mills and steelworking factories are in those giant places like Seattle that just rains all the fucking time because they thought that satellites couldn't see through the clouds. This is old shit they've done before. And people go, well, that futuristic stuff sounds stupid and doesn't sound like it's going to happen. It's happened in the past. Why would they stop doing something that works? It doesn't make sense. You stop researching into something when it stops working for you or when you need to modify it. You're telling me that they have, what, 100 years or 70 years? They haven't perfected that method to be able to fix that? Really? Mm-hmm. Like when aliens start showing up, is that aliens? I don't think so. I think it's government tech. And I think it's because they've perfected it and they've made duplicates to now where they got a working system. And that's why we have these propulsion things that people keep talking about. These three lights in the sky, that just might be some other form of tech. Mm-hmm. It might just be some type of spying device. It's a way of surveying without, you see a bunch of people that block off a part of an intersection for like 2 days worth, saying we got to survey this part of the land. It's like, no, now they have drones up in the sky that'll be able to do that for you. Go outside right now when it's night or whatever, try and point out a star. You're going to point one out and be like, there's a star. I see one out of that little thing and it's blinking. It's not a fucking star.
Well, I must say, actually, from me and Matt, we're obviously originally from down in Essex in the UK, and down there you do have next to no chance of seeing. You might see one bright light, but that's about it. In Norfolk, where we are now in East Anglia, I'm not even joking, you can see millions of stars. It is something that blew my mind when I moved up here.
And you have a lot of people there
in Norfolk. What would you say, Matt?
What, a population?
Yeah, I mean, it's no London, but...
I've no idea. It's quite a rural area, and everyone is very, very sort of... There's a lot of distance between everyone.
Yeah, because with more distance between people, the more stars you'll see. It's a matter of how many people are jammed into one spot, creating light pollution.
Yeah.
But the light pollution in London as well, and surrounding Greater London is ridiculous. But here, yeah, even friends of ours who have come up from down south, of an evening, they're just like, this is ridiculous. And I don't think they realized there was that many stars.
It's kind of hard when you don't ever really eat. I don't think you notice it, though. It's kind of like a dimmer switch. You just slowly gets turned up or turned down. And you just don't really notice the decline. Like, there's people with like back pain that they've had for ages. They don't remember what a normal back feels like because they've just been used to the pain for so long.
Mm. There are 907,000 people in Norfolk, and it's an area of 5,372 kilometers squared.
And he knows that off the top of his head as well.
Definitely didn't see his face light up like a Christmas tree.
No, not at all. I wasn't using the algorithms.
I think it was you guys that I mentioned in a podcast, because I was listening to your episode where you tried to create an intro on Boomy. And that's fascinating to me, where I was like, this is cool algorithm, but this is also a reason why like Nas is so famous. A lot of his studio beats are all algorithms. So necessarily, are you now brainwashing a whole generation of people to only like perfected systems of music rather than the old experiences of like, and I think I mentioned this before in a podcast, but I messed up the name, but John Lennon, when he's singing Help, the live version of that, if you look up the mistake that he had, he says, oh, fuck me, as he went and tries to say, like, strum the guitar. He messes up and says that. And it's very faint, but you can hear it in the original recording. You're going to miss out things like that of human error and flaw that I think that a lot of people appreciate. Like, when I listen to my favorite artist and he slips up or he mispronounces a word, or even a live concert, sometimes sounds better than the original. And I'm like, I really appreciate that. But now if you have a human algorithm or machine algorithm that's able to create music, you're now adapting a whole audience to kids that are only going to want that and find the ease of access of using that. Where Lil Nas just rapped, or he just talked the words of Dolly Parton's song, and it sounded great, even though he was just saying words. Mm-hmm. And I'm not necessarily mad at that. I'm just looking at, like, you're starting to see the creativity shift, where now you're relying on a device to be able to do that all for you. And it's much like a car, for instance, is kind of a requirement in a lot of ways. It used to just be a luxury. It is a luxury, but we've made it a requirement by having jobs that are so far away, instead of getting jobs that are the closest to us that could be travel by bike or travel by our feet. And you start to realize that this reliance on this thing, or this reliance of using tech to be able to do the things we need to do. Try doing a podcast when all technology's gone. You can't. We've relied too much and invested too much into something to do something for us, even though it necessarily needs us. How long until they can just look at all my whatever thousand something episodes and be able to just make an AI clone of me? I'm logged into this thing, and they can easily...
do it already. Because I'm sure we was reading about this the other day. What was it? Or was I reading about it? I talked about it with you, James. There's a service, and I need to look it up and see what it is. But if they have 30 minutes of your audio, so we could just take one of your episodes, upload it, it will recreate your voice in AI. So all we'd have to do is then give it the words. So give it the text, and it would talk like you perfectly.
I want to meet that AI clone so bad. I know he's
how do we know this is the real Robbie, though, Matt? That's the question.
Exactly. But apparently this technology is already being used because celebrities, like in the article I read, they named Bruce Willis. Bruce Willis can't be bothered to like do an advert for Uzbekistan or wherever it may be. So he that will just they'll have a recreation of him and just use this technology to mimic his voice. And so Bruce Willis can sell his vodka to some country you've never heard of and still get paid. But it's, you know, it's not actually him.
Well, it's kind of like the shift with actors. Actors used to have contracts where they had to stay in a certain weight. Like my buddy who worked at Universal Studios, who's an ex-Power Ranger, had to stay in a certain weight contract.
How cool is that?
So, yeah, the original ones. It's now I'm friends with the Power Ranger. That's my life goal right there. I could die
happy. Is really cool.
But he had a contract with Universal Studios where he had to stay a certain weight to be able to play the character that he was established for. So you can't do that anymore because that would be body shaming. But it's kind of translated over now where it kind of it went from models and actors to now it's kind of hitting like this idea of what we want like politicians to be for some reason. Like, oh, this politician, he's overweight, he's this. It's like now you expect your politician to look like an Abercrombie and Finch model, and necessarily they're not fit to do that. But it became like, when did we start electing people that were just good at selling cologne rather than if they were good to run the country? It just, I get into this weird like thought where I'm kind of curious to what you guys think the next 5 years or where do you predict AI to lead into? Because I know this is like a lot of like, not necessarily doom about it, but a lot of like, well, you got to be careful where you step kind of thing. And I only see it kind of expanding out to the point where it's really going to become a more difficult issue to be able to do things like buy something at the store. Well, if you never leave your house, then everything could just be online orders because all it's online shopping. You go to the store in real life, you're like, man, I've been in here for 4 years. I'm just going to go outside. I'm going to drive to the store. You go to the store and everything's just a picture. You're like, where's the, do you have this? Do you have this dog food or do you have this whatever, let's say baklava. You guys like baklava, right? Just grab
a photo of
baklava, like start whipping it. Like, where's the, do you know where the baklava is? And the lady's like, we actually don't have any of those on stock, but I can order it and send it to your house. And actually, you know what's interesting is, why are you out of your house? Well, I wanted to get some fresh air. You're not supposed to be out of your house. Well, I just felt like I could get back in your house. And you're like, so... is there ever going to, why would they force you inside your home when they could just make it so damn easy to stay at home and not have to leave your house? That's what I'm saying, is you see the shift start to happen, is not forcing you in your home, but making it so being at home is super, super fun. So there's no point in wanting to leave, like having a vending machine or pool in your basement. That sounds amazing. I hope one day we can perfect it to where I don't end up, well, I can barbecue in my fucking garage with the door closed and I don't die. You know what I mean? Like I'm thinking.
Yeah, I was just going to say you're right, because even, I mean, in the UK, Amazon now they're out kind of outsourcing to supermarkets. We've got Morrisons. You can now, which is one of our big supermarkets here, I can order all my groceries through Amazon to be delivered to home. And when you see it, you're like, oh,
Prime delivery, isn't it?
Yeah, that's quite cool. You can get it next day or whatever. Some of it's even same day. And you're like, oh, I could just order it like through Amazon. Oh, that's awesome. But like you said, Rob, it's taking away that element of getting outside and, you know, walking to the shops or whatever. The appeal is laziness. That's what it is.
Mm-hmm. Especially during the pandemic. And sort of the situation of me working from home, my wife wasn't working from home, but was around a lot more because we had two kids at home. They were homeschooling. We needed stuff for them. The thought of next day delivery, bang, yeah, I need that. And I don't even need to think about it. It was an overused luxury, let's say. Because the time was the issue. And for that 30 seconds, I can think, right, I've got that and it's coming tomorrow and I need that, whatever it is. Amazing.
What do you think about, since you guys are both parents, how do you guys feel about online schooling? Like, do you notice the necessity of going to a school to actually physically learn because Zoom is just so difficult? Maybe they perfect that method to improve it, but I think it might help with individual tutoring online. But when it comes to a group class, it's just so hard. And you kind of already putting expectations on teachers already, you know, giving them a class of 50 or 30 kids rather than maybe a 10. And it's at this point, now you're doing it online. I have buddies that have a GIF picture of like their Zoom call, and it's just them looking up, looking down, writing, looking up, blinking twice, and then looking back down and doing that, to where they don't even have to be in the room. They could just go play video games, and this GIF thing could just be on repeat going over and over again.
Crazy. I well, having done it for months, and the psychological effect on the children is that they just miss that human interaction, or miss interaction with their peers, you know, just people of their own age. And that was really hard. And really hard, particularly for my youngest. My oldest, really, Xbox Live was a real savior, because it meant he could talk to his friends, and he would be there and he'd be interacting with his friends through a game and they'd chat. And that was great. Whereas my youngest didn't have that at the time. And he really, really missed it. And it did sort of quite effective for that period of time. The actual education, I think the first lockdown, it was a bit hit and miss. Second lockdown, again, for my youngest, the teacher was doing sort of video calls, and they were all there and they could chat to each other there. And it did work. It was a short-term fix, but not a replacement for being there. Definitely not. I think their group of friends was far more important.
I would say it was slightly different for my two, because my son at the time was only at nursery. So other than the interaction that Matt said, the same, that he didn't have to do any sort of homeschooling or anything. So he was just kind of dossing around indoors with us while I'm trying to work. And my wife's a teacher, so she was off work. She was actually on maternity leave because our youngest was born just before the pandemic hit. I'd say the biggest impact that I've probably noticed is from a health perspective, actually, because now they are back to like my youngest is now back to nursery. My son is now started preschool. Their immune system, especially my daughter, the youngest, is gone to put, because she wasn't exposed to other kids who might have had a cold or whatever. So her immune system is awful. So now when she gets a cold, it lasts like, you know, I mean, Matt knows because I work with Matt, so I'm always telling him about it. But she'll have a cold and it'll take her 2 weeks to get over it now, whereas before it used to be a few days or whatever. And I think that's one of the bigger things. You know, they've not been exposed to all the bugs and all that sort of stuff that tend to go around that we all grew up with. So that's one of the big things.
I'm trying my hardest to look through and trying to see what the deeper message or issue is that could be the next one that's bubbling up to the surface. And maybe it's not an issue with tech. Maybe it's not an issue with people. Maybe it's an issue with the fact that nobody in this goddamn world can develop a healthy relationship with anything. Like, that's what it is, I think. Cause like I can speak on this because I was a kid who was addicted to his Xbox. Both my parents worked. I didn't have a car, couldn't go out, like leave the house or anything at 1 o'clock in the morning. So I just play Xbox. It was a great way to hang out with friends. Eventually, my parents, when they were home, like, all he does is play Xbox. So we got to take it away from him. And I would get so physically mad and so defensive over this thing where I would almost get close to stabbing somebody. And you start to realize, like, I couldn't see the issue and they couldn't see why there was an issue, was because you're basically taking away a family member in a way. Because that's the one thing that is always there when nobody else was. And I think now that I look at it back now, I'm so happy that I don't, like, when people are like, want to play this game? I'm like, I don't play Xbox anymore. I don't play any games. All I do is, the only tech I use is my phone. And I use this computer for when I do a podcast. And that's depending on, I limit it to like a certain day a week. I try not to do any littered throughout the week, or just do an offshoot of one. But like when I'm sitting there, I canceled my Netflix. I canceled a whole bunch of things. I'll listen to a podcast. I'll listen to my friend's podcast. I got plenty of friends out there that have podcasts that I constantly can keep busy with those. But just finding basic ways to be in healthy relationship with things, which for some people like myself, I just prefer to cut it off because I know I'm just going to get that addicted into it. I prefer to get into a healthy relationship with the gym. I'll do 6 hours of cardio. I'm fine with that. I'd rather do that than play Xbox for that amount of time because it's healthier. Maybe not 6 hours, but, you know, to each their own. I'm kind of a freak in a way. But I think it all boils down to there's no basics of like, this is why we had time limits when we were kids. This is why we had these restrictions and these things of you can only spend this amount of time. You can't stay all day at your community pool. Okay, your pool has to close. McDonald's does not serve breakfast all fucking day. You can't do it. You get your ass there before 10 a.m. and then you get your whatever McGriddle or whatever. But don't ask them at four.
It should say that.
Well, they do serve here all day breakfast, but I don't want them to, because at 11 p.m. you do not get a sausage biscuit. No, 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 no. You get a burger like every other damn American that's eating fast food. But it's now the fact of, like, you can blame McDonald's for starting to make salads. They let people sue them for making them fat. It's like they make a fucking product. They bought it. Like, that's their gig. You can't blame them for the issue that you got to understand the consequences. And I think now the world's more about pushing blame on things rather than looking at the consequences of your actions. I can push blame on political elites or all these people, whatever, who necessarily might be to blame. But at the same time, I have to understand the responsibility of the fact that if I don't talk about it, or if anybody else doesn't talk about it, or if anybody doesn't look into it, or if anybody doesn't do the research for themselves, you're letting it happen. Hear no evil, see no evil doesn't work so well when you really start to complain about the issues of what's happening later down the road. And I feel like everyone gets right to the doorstep of change and then they walk away. They feel like, oh, well, they give you something like, all right, fine, we'll pass this, we'll keep all the statues down. But then they walked away. Well, where's the issue that was fixed? Because I'm seeing it still happen if it's still an issue. You start to understand is like they find easy ways to distract you. They find, and that's just our attention spans. That's not, we don't have a healthy relationship with anything because our attention spans are so quick.
I think, Robbie, we probably need to wrap up now just to say.
Well, I had fun. Sorry, I ranted.
No problem at all. It's 20 past one. So we've done that, hour and 20 nearly.
Well, you guys want to say your links real quick and then.
This week in Metropolis, every single week we talk about gaming, technology, lots of AI and stuff like that, movies, superheroes, comic books, all of the above, really. New episode every week. You can watch it on YouTube. You can listen to it on Spotify, Amazon, Apple, anywhere else that you choose to listen to your podcasts, and find us on the usual awful, horrible, manipulative social networks that we've discussed, such as Twitter, Facebook, Instagram,
MySpace, Bebo,
TikTok, Friendster, all of those.
Friends Reunited,
yeah, all those classics.
LinkedIn?
We are on LinkedIn as well.
Well, I'll make sure I link it all in the description, and thanks for listening to this episode of Out of the Blank.